From the Ground Up, a podcast of the Alabama Extension Home Grounds team educating you about home landscapes, gardens, and home pests.
Thank you for joining us today on From the Ground Up. My guest today is Jane Litzo, and she is a regional extension agent from Northwest Alabama.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. It's great to be here today.
So Jane, she grew up in the nursery industry, and she's going to talk to us today about propagation. There's a lot of questions about propagation. So let's start from the beginning. Well, let's start with your background. Tell us how you got here.
Well, hi, everybody. My name is Jane, and I am from native of Montgomery, Alabama. I grew up in the retail and wholesale nursery industry in Montgomery, and I am now a regional agent here in Northwest Alabama. My background is in propagation, but my passion is growing plants. And, we have a lot of homeowners that call me, master gardeners that call me about how do I propagate this? Either for just for pleasure, maybe they just want to learn how to grow plants, or they're trying to do it for a business or selling their plants. So that's a lot of times what I get questions about.
So you've been involved with the nursery industry since birth, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, I can remember my dad, actually, he would have my sister and I, teeny tiny babies and toddlers, sitting on the potting wagon while he's sticking cuttings, or, you know, he's teaching us how to propagate stuff from just knee high. So I've been doing this a long time. I may be young, but been doing this a long time.
Well, you're perfect for this subject. Mm-hmm. Let's just start from the beginning. Tell me the types of propagation that there are. What do you do to get started?
Okay. So from the very beginning, you have two types of propagation methods. There's sexual propagation, and then there's asexual propagation. So sexual propagation would be, for example, seeds. You have to have a male and female egg, and then the pollen that makes the new little plant. Mm-hmm. The other type of propagation is asexual propagation. That's probably the primary form of propagation. So that's going to be things like cuttings, air layering, might be grafting, separation and division, just to name a few.
So there's a lot of different things you can get to, and it's a really deep science when you get down to it. So let's start with asexual propagation. Tell me about that.
Okay. So probably the most common type of asexual propagation would be cuttings, taking a cutting. So there are different types of cuttings. You can do what we call a soft tissue cutting. We have a semi-hardwood cutting, and then we have hardwood cutting. So soft tissue would be anything that is herbaceous. Maybe you've got sweet potato vine, for example, or you've got that aloe vera plant that you're wanting to propagate. So what I'd want to do is take about, if it's, for example, if it is the aloe vera or maybe a snake plant, that's a really common one. I just had that the other day, a question. You'd want to get a little piece of it, roughly about 4 to 6 inch piece, and you want to take the cutting right above the node, and that node right there, that's where a lot of the growth is happening in the plant. That's where a lot of that tissue is going to be pushing upward, trying to form a new plant. So where you want to take that cutting is right above that node. And then what you'll want to do, if you're doing a soft tissue cutting, you can simply put it in a little glass of water and stick it in a windowsill or a sunny location. You can also take a softwood cutting, and you can do this for other types of cuttings. You can take that cutting, put a little bit of rooting hormone on it. Rooting hormone is natural. It's found naturally in the plant. It's from indole acetic acid, or IAA, and you can find it in many forms. Rooting hormone, it comes in a liquid, a powder, and even a gel. But what you'll do with that rooting hormone is on the base of the cutting, you'll actually dip it into the rooting hormone. Now, one thing I always tell people is don't directly dip into the container itself. Put a little bit of the hormone, rooting hormone, into a separate container. That way you don't have cross-contamination. Mm-hmm. So you'll just dip it in to your rooting hormone, and then you can place it into your soil media. So whether that's potting soil, directly into the ground, what have you. And that can be, that's a method for softwood, semi-hardwood, and hardwood cuttings. For semi-hardwood cuttings, that's going to be cuttings that have some slight flexibility, not completely woody throughout. Mm-hmm. So many of your shrubs can be done in this manner. For hardwood cuttings, that's going to be your, that's typically plants that are taken during the dormant season. So many of our trees, a lot of fruit trees are done in this manner or can be done in this manner. Roses are another one that's very popular to do as a hardwood cutting, and they are completely woody throughout. So again, just to kind of recap, that method is going to be you take about a 4 to 6 inch stem cutting, and what you'll want to do is you will take that and cut it right above the node. So that node is where the leaves start to, that point of attachment where the leaves are. So you want to take that right above the node, and then you'll take off the bottom, any lower leaves, and then you'll dip it into the rooting hormone, and then plant into your soil media. The other thing you'll want to do too is also to remove any flower or fruit that plant might have. The reason I say that is that poor baby plant, it's trying to form a new roots, and if it's having to support flower or fruit, it's going to struggle a little bit. You really want to try, I always say this too, you always want to try to have the plant form a really good root system, and then you can focus on the shoot system when you're doing a cutting.
So, Jane, you mentioned softwood cutting, semi-hardwood, and hardwood cuttings. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between the three, or is there a better method for an individual plant based on what it is? Mm-hmm. So you mentioned roses. Mm-hmm. Should roses, can they be propagated at any time, or do they need to harden off before the fall?
Yeah, so just to kind of backtrack a little bit, so the differences between softwood, semi-hardwood, and hardwood cuttings, softwood, the tissue is going to be flexible. You would be able to bend it, and it's going to be fleshy. It's going to snap really easily. The semi-hardwood is not completely. Usually that's the current season's growth for the plant. The softwood cutting is going to typically be the current growth or what's new. It's going to be that current growth. And then the semi-hardwood is going to be the current season's growth. It's a little bit, not completely woody, so it's somewhat flexible, and it's going to be able to bend, but it'll snap at about a 70-degree angle. And then when you get a hardwood cutting, that's going to be woody throughout, and typically you want, for a semi-hardwood, you want it to be at least the diameter of a pencil. Softwood and semi-hardwood can tend to be a little bit smaller and not as well developed. For your question about the roses, usually you want to take those as either semi-hardwood or even hardwood. Mm-hmm. Those tend to do better. I really wouldn't do a rose with softwood tissue. They tend to be weaker. Mm-hmm. Or develop a weaker plant. So what I would actually encourage you to do is take those either in the summertime or even in when we start to go into the fall when they go dormant. Mm-hmm. And then you can actually, if you do, say, for example, a hardwood cutting, you want to take them when they're dormant, cut them off just above the node, and then you can actually put them into what we call the chiller, into the fridge, allow them to harden off slightly, and then in the spring you can go ahead and make your cutting if you like. You can do this also for many of our fruit trees. We do this also for if you're getting ready to graft. That's another form of propagation. We see this a lot in the industry. Matter of fact, a lot of times, I'll just give you the example of my family. A lot of times we get rose cuttings sent from California, and then we often are sticking those cuttings in about December. So around the holidays, that's when we are actually sticking cuttings, believe it or not, and it's when, so that they'll be ready for the spring.
Yeah, that was kind of a shameless plug or a shameless question for me, because I have a rose that was my great grandma's, actually probably like my third great grandma's, and it's a really tiny, it's a beautiful little rose. It loves cold weather. It's very odd, but I really want to propagate it. I don't want to lose that. It's a sentimental plant, like a lot of plants are to people. So it's kind of a shameless ask there. So
not a problem.
But what are the easiest methods of propagation for homeowners?
Okay, so some of the easiest methods are going to be layering. Layering is actually an old form of propagation. It dates back to the medieval times. There's several methods within layering. So we have what's known as simple layering. We have what's known as air layering. And we have serpentine layering. These methods of layering are really very similar. I'll start with simple layering. So simple layering is when you take a flexible branch of either a tree or a shrub. A good example might be a rosemary plant, or something like a forsythia or spirea. And what you'll want to do is take that. The plant has to be somewhat flexible. You have to bend it down. And then what you're going to do is you're going to cover it either with soil. You can also use a rock or a brick, and you're going to simply cover that. And then what's going to happen is the plant is going to form a new root system, and then a new baby plant is going to start to form. Now, when it forms, what you'll do is you'll come on the backside of it and you'll simply cut, and then you can take that new plant and pot it up into a container. Maybe you want to put it in your yard. That's called simple layering. Some of our plants naturally do this. For example, strawberries, spider plant. I like to say that they develop simply on. I like to compare it to the mama and the baby with the umbilical cord. Essentially, the new baby develops while still attached to the parent plant, and that's essentially what layering is. And again, there's several forms or methods: simple layering, air layering. My second method is air layering. This was actually a new form of propagation for me, but it's really kind of cool. It can be done on a lot of our tropical plants and our interior plants or our house plants. Mm-hmm. You want to do this in the spring or summertime. So what you'll do is, you do this on a stem. You'll take your a good clean knife or a pair of scissors.
And when you mean clean, you mean sanitized.
Yes. Yes. Right. I do want to repeat. That's going to help with preventing cross-contamination and disease, plant disease. So what you'll want to do is for an air layer, you'll simply take your knife, and you'll cut around the stem about a 4 to 6 inch lengthwise. You'll cut around the stem, and you'll remove the cambium layer or the bark. That's what you're going to want to remove. Then you will simply take some sphagnum moss. You'll have made sure that you wet it, let it soak in some water prior to using, and then you will put that sphagnum moss around that open cut wound, and then you will wrap it around. Place either some aluminum foil. You can also use saran wrap. Now, in my experience, just using the aluminum foil works fine, but you got to use that sphagnum moss. Another tip that I tell people when they use this, put a little bit of rooting hormone on that spot that you have what we call girdled, or you have removed the bark from. That's what you want to take, and you want to put a little rooting hormone on it, and then you'll put your sphagnum moss. Yeah. And then put your aluminum foil around.
And it doesn't take a lot of
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't. Just a little bit. Yeah, just a little bit of your rooting hormone. If you want to put it on, set, paint it on there, use either a simple little watercolor paintbrush or even your finger. In some cases, you can just use your finger and put that rooting hormone, and then you'll want to make sure that you put your sphagnum moss around that girdled or that open wound, and then place the aluminum foil around it. Typically, time frame, you'll get a new plant. The roots will actually develop in that spot, in that place that you have girdled. And typical time frame, is going to be around 4 to 6 weeks. One thing I often tell people is to check it every once in a while because you can lose moisture. Mm-hmm. And the best time to do this is actually going to be summertime and in the spring. You don't want to do this in the wintertime because of our heat and humidity here in Alabama. We actually kind of make a mini greenhouse, if you will, inside that aluminum foil, and inside that little cocoon, if you will, for the plant to develop. And then simply when it's ready, you'll cut from the bottom of the aluminum foil from the bottom of the plant, and those roots should have developed, and then you can stick it into the ground or into a pot or container. And the best plants that do this are going to be your tropicals and your house plants.
Okay. And you can do that on trees as well, right?
Yes, yes, you can.
I remember in class when we were going through undergrad, we did it on a, I think it was a weeping cherry, and that was really fun to see that, and it's free plants. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool method, and it's very, very easy to do. So So what are other types of propagation that's really easy for a homeowner to do?
So another type of propagation method is going to be what we call separation and division. So they're very similar. So let me just tell you the difference between the two. So division is when you have a plant, for example, many of our monocot type plants. So our grasses. Turf grass is another example, ornamental grasses. You can do this with some of our dicot or our shrubs and trees, but mostly this is going to be for our monocot plants like daylilies. That's another good example. Agapanthus, if you're down in South Alabama. When you divide plants, you're basically taking a plant that has become mature, very mature, maybe for its spot, and you're going to take a whole plant and you're actually going to separate it into chunks or into hunks, if you will. And naturally, a lot of these plants will have a natural spot where they will divide. So, matter of fact, just yesterday I was out with our master gardeners and we were dividing some daylilies. And you'll see, you'll notice where they will naturally split. You'll have a new plant that is developing and you want to split that. And plants are actually very resilient, so I know sometimes people are hesitant to want to rip them apart, but it's okay. You'll want to just make sure that you keep the shoot and the root intact, and look for those places or those spots in the plant where they naturally divide. Now, that's division. For separation, it's very similar, but that's going to be most of your bulb type plants. So think gladiolus, daffodils. What you're going to be doing is actually separating the main bulb, if you will, from the baby bulb. I know I've used that analogy already with separation of the parent and the baby. But this is when you've got a new baby plant that's starting to form and it naturally splits, that's where you're gonna pull it off.
And that's why it's called a nursery, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's why it's called a nursery, because we are growing, baby plants. Yeah.
Right, right. Okay, so we covered several of the methods of asexual propagation. So what about sexual propagation?
All right, so sexual propagation is when you're propagating via seed. And I know that's probably what most people are probably most familiar with. It is one of the most economically, the easiest for people to do, but it can also be the most frustrating because you've got to wait until that baby seed turns into a mature plant. It also takes a little bit more time versus your cuttings or layering or separation and division. So plants that are easily propagated by seed are going to be mostly your annual plants. So that's going to be things like your tomatoes, your lettuces, your herbs, some specifics, cosmos, zinnias, many of your bedding plants, begonias, vinca. This is the main and primary method of propagating many of your annual plants. Not that you can't do them by other methods, but this is probably the most common and going to be the most economically easy for a homeowner. Now, when you do propagate by seed, you have what's known as either direct or indirect seeding. So you'll have to look at the package when you purchase the seed, and it'll say, hey, you need to direct seed this or indirect. Now, what that means with direct in regards to direct seeding, that's where you plant it directly into your garden. That plant is not going to move. It's going to grow right there. Indirect seeding is very common, especially for things like tomatoes. That is, and peppers, that's going to be indirect seeded. So you'll start and sow those indoors, and you're going to let them become a nice little seedling and then transplant into the garden or into a container wherever you would like your plant to be. So that's the main thing. Timing is also very crucial with seed. So making sure that you sow them at the right time, making sure that you water. Water is also, and I didn't mention this with asexual propagation, but water is crucial. You cannot allow, say, for example, your cuttings to dry out. You cannot allow your seeds to dry out. Now, you don't want to overwater, but you want to make sure that you don't leave them for days without watering, because otherwise they're just going to sit there. And one thing that we encourage, and I encourage homeowners to do when you're trying to propagate by seed, is actually to either scarify or stratify or stratification. Scarification, that's basically what you're trying to replicate in both of these, actually, scarification and stratification. You're trying to replicate environmental, the environment for the plant naturally. So whether that's, for example, going through the gut of an animal, that acidity, for example, that would be an example of stratification or scarification, or by simply placing that seed in a little bit of a wrapped, placing the seed in a paper towel and let it be wet and then placing it into a window seal, that's going to help start that germination of the seed. That's what I encourage people to do. And again, always look at the packaging when you get it. It's very common for people just to rip open a package of seed and they just start planting. So it's really important to read that packaging to know, am I direct seeding, am I indirect seeding? Do I need to scarify or stratify the plants or the plant seed before planting? Most of the time when you want to sow seeds, or actually the best time that is for is temperature with plant and plants go, they prefer temperatures of about 70 to 80 degrees. Too high of a temperature or too low of a temperature, you're going to have a struggle with plants trying to germinate. You're also, in regards to asexual propagation, you're also going to struggle for your cuttings or layering. So most of the time we try to encourage our homeowners to, when you're going to sow seeds, you want to do this in either the spring. If you're trying to grow annual bedding plants, start them in the spring. You might also, if you're a homeowner, start for your fall, for your spring or summer garden, your vegetable garden. You want to start those in about March or even in late February. You want to start them indoors, and then you can transplant in about April. If you're in North Alabama, you're in mid-April is when you transplant and plant in your garden. If you're in South Alabama or Central Alabama, you can do this in about early April or even mid-March. You can transplant. The other thing, too, you want to make sure that you place sowing your seeds. They have to be in full sun. Regardless if you're planting indoors or outdoors, most all of our seeds, they're going to require full sun. Now, there are some exceptions. There are some plants that actually do need darkness, and that's called photoblastic or negative or positive photoblastic. So if they need sunlight, they're called positive photoblastic. If they need darkness, it's negative photoblastic. So that's the main thing, is you got to have good full sun. Last but not least, you do need to have a good growing media or soil media. And I get often asked this, is what's the best soil media to grow seeds in? Mm-hmm. And that can actually vary. The main thing I always tell people is you want well draining soil. For most homeowners and what they have access to, potting soil, but potting soil is really what you want to try to sow your seeds in. You can also sow seeds in something like perlite, very light, well draining material. That's what you're looking for. In regards to sowing your plants. I have also seen where people will start their seeds inside and then decide that they that maybe I'm not watering them properly, or mm-hmm. I can't take care of them properly. And then what we can do is set them on like a little irrigation system, or even make a little mini greenhouse for your plants. And this can be for cuttings or for your seed. One thing I tell folks is if you can take a tub, like a plastic tote, mm-hmm. Put some drainage holes in it, put your soil media in the bottom, and then you can either sow your seeds, or if you have your cuttings, you can put them in there and then cover it with the plastic, a clear plastic, and then place into a good spot in your home, maybe on your back patio, where you can receive some good sunlight. I've also seen where we've upcycled and used those plastic containers that you get from the takeout restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can make a little mini greenhouse out of that as well. If you, again, you just need to make sure you have holes in the bottom, and then you can make a mini greenhouse.
But it needs to be clear.
Yes, it needs to be clear so that you get good sunlight penetration through there. And again, you're trying to make a little dome of humidity. That's what you're really shooting for, is making that little mini greenhouse a humid environment.
So you could really, theoretically, you could use pretty much anything as long as it has drainage and has a clear top mm-hmm. where it can get some sunlight.
Yep, yep. And if you...
So be creative.
Oh, yeah, you can be very creative. Not to shame people, but you don't have to go out and buy these big fancy greenhouses. I will tell you, most of the time in the nursery business, our greenhouses are not, our propagation houses are not super fancy. It's a lot of times it's made of wood, a little bit of metal, PVC pipe, and some plastic. So you can, even for the homeowner, I would encourage you, get creative. Something also as simple as, hey, I've got my cutting or I've got my seed, and I take the top of a bottle, of a plastic bottle, and place that plastic bottle over the top with a little bit of air. You can make a really cool little mini greenhouse. It's a great activity also for kids.
Yeah.
So don't limit yourself when it comes to propagating. Also, one other thing just to plug, you will save money by propagating your own plants. Mm-hmm. Now, don't go out and take cuttings from random strangers' yards. I always ask, or don't take seeds from random strangers' yards. Yeah. Always ask. But you can save a lot of money by propagating your own plants. It just takes, as with anything, it takes a little time. It takes a little TLC, tender loving care, when you're trying to take care of your plants.
But it's also a good way to, like, if you have a plant that someone loves, you can propagate it for them. Mm-hmm. And give it to them as a gift.
Yes. Yeah. And so I've seen that.
That's the beauty of plants. Mm-hmm. They can easily be reproduced, but people just want to go out and buy new ones. And that's fine. You know, we encourage people to support local nurseries mm-hmm. and local garden centers, but you can do a lot of this yourself too, mm-hmm. and experiment too. I always tell people to experiment, write notes, take really good notes on what you're doing, you know, what you did, take pictures on your phone, you know, try to keep up with what you did, how much of, you know, if you put fertilizer on there, things like that. You know, just try to keep a track of what you're doing and then play around with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're always learning. Mm-hmm. I'm always learning. You're always learning. So it's mm-hmm. that's what makes it fun, is yes. to get out and learn and to experiment and to learn yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, horticulture in general, and especially propagation, is a science that keeps evolving, and you know, you can be as creative, and it's a bit of an art and a science, yeah. if you will, horticulture is, and propagation is something to, you know, experiment with. And you know, they're always coming up with new and different ways to propagate plants. You know, from a commercial standpoint, you know, we use primarily asexual propagation, just because that plant is going to get very big very fast. But for the homeowner, you know, you have the time to experiment and really enjoy what there is.
When you propagate something, mm-hmm. do they need any fertilizer?
So this is a tricky question. So a lot of times I encourage people not to immediately fertilize. If you wanted to, for seeds, maybe do a little bit of a liquid fertilizer, but I usually, what you want is to allow that plant to reach a little bit of maturity. Mm-hmm. Allow it, if it's seed, allow it to become a seedling, and then get it ready for transplanting, and then that's when you want to actually put on your, say, granular fertilizer. Mm-hmm. For your cuttings or for air layering, really, I really try not to actually stay away from fertilizers. The main thing with when you're propagating is that humidity and the temperature, water, and sunlight. That's what you're going after. When you do fertilize, you want to make sure that the plant has a good root system and it's got a good shoot system and it's ready for transplanting. Otherwise, you might actually burn the little seedling. I've seen this happen occasionally, is a homeowner will be really excited. They've got new tomato plants that are popping up and germinating, and they immediately put the fertilizer on it, and then it ends up burning the plant. So you want to allow it to germinate, allow it to grow up a little bit. Once they're ready to be transplanted, that's when you want to fertilize. And we do the same thing for, say, our roses. We might get into the nursery, or if you're a homeowner, once you have that that cutting and it has been grown in its container, you're ready to, you know, put into a larger container, that's when you want to add your fertilizer.
So what about cross-pollination and making new plants when you cross-pollinate? Now, that mm-hmm. may be a little bit out of the realm of this conversation, but any advice on that?
Yeah, so I'm going to use the example of blueberries, because that's a really common one that I see a lot of homeowners. They want a blueberry plant, but they only bought one.
Yeah.
And so we have what's called monoecious and dioecious plants. And so you can have plants that have both the male and female part on that singular plant, or we have plants that have male parts, and we have plants that have just female parts. If you, for example, get one of our blueberries, they are either male or female, you have to have two. You have to have two of them in order for cross-pollination. Another good example is some of our hollies in the nursery industry. Some of our hollies also, if you want berries, you have to have the male and you have to have the female. And it's important that you have them planted near each other, at least in the same backyard. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you're just going to have really pretty little flowers, but no fruit. For example, and that can be a challenge for homeowners if you're trying to have good cross-pollination. If you ever have questions and you're like, I don't know if I have male or female, or if it's monocot or dicot, or monoecious or dioecious, one of the things you will need to do is to, you can always research it. We highly recommend that you check out our extension website or any extension, state extension website. They'll give you good information about that specific plant. Or do a little research when you go to the garden center. Ask those garden center representatives. Say, hey, do I need to have two plants or one plant if I'm going to get good blueberries? That's one of the other things we always tell people to look for, is to ask and research about the types of plants that you're putting in your yard.
Well, Jane, thanks for joining us today. As always, if you have questions about anything with plants or propagation in particular, feel free to reach out to your local extension agent and we'll guide you in whatever we can help you. If we don't know the answer, we'll find the answer. So always feel free to contact one of us extension agents. And again, thank you for being here. And we'll hope to see you next time.
Thank you for having me.
From the Ground Up is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.